Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second, I was about to say This Week in Media, which is something I often co-host, but today this is the CT Tech Junkie podcast, and it looks like Doug Hardy is joining us, my co-host and partner in crime on this project. How you doing, Doug?
Good.
And it seems like we tend to do these like every 2 months, so maybe that'll be the schedule in which we do this. So last time we were at NASA looking at space rockets and space shuttles, and today we're going to be a little bit more down to earth with tax policy. But but we have a good reason to be, because you know, this morning I got an email. In full disclosure, I am an Amazon.com affiliate, so I was making money from Amazon by linking to products that are on their site, and when people bought those products, I got a commission. So today, why don't you tell everyone, Doug, today what happened?
Well, today the company announced that they were just going to be ending their affiliation program, their affiliate program with Connecticut, because the state has passed what has been named the Amazon tax. It's a sales tax. They're attempting to pass a sales tax on goods purchased on the internet. It's an effort to recover, you know, billions of dollars that have gone from the cash register at the brick and mortar store, where they still do sales tax, up to the cloud where there is no sales tax. So the government's Connecticut is sort of following suit. There's been several others. Or a few others that are attempting to do this, and Amazon is pushing back.
And they are in a big way, and that's what many Connecticut bloggers got in their email boxes today. We also have a great guest here who's going to help us make sense of all this stuff, and that's Dan Gottfried, and he is a tax partner at Rogan Nassau LLC in Hartford. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, great. Thanks for having me.
And his practice encompasses domestic and international business transactions, but he's also an expert on federal, state, and international tax planning. So we figured he'd be the guy to talk to and try to make sense of the law and some of the things that have been going on related to sales tax across state lines, and perhaps some of the things that we might see in the near future. And the first thing we want to do is just kind of talk about exactly what this is, because when we posted this story today, some people thought, oh, there's Amazon's taking leave of Connecticut. They're not going to do business here anymore. And that's not the case. What's happened is that Connecticut and a few other states have been trying to find a way for Amazon and other online retailers to pay sales tax on transactions that happen from their site into Connecticut in this case. And what they've done is they've said that anyone who is an affiliate marketer, basically someone who is linking to Amazon, in which Amazon will pay a commission. It's a program called Amazon Associates that they do. A blogger or anyone really can set up a special link that goes to Amazon, either can go to their site or go to a product. And Amazon will pay that blogger a 4% commission on the sale of goods that somebody makes if they happen to get to Amazon through that person's site. And what the legislature is trying to do is say that those affiliates constitute an in-state presence for the business, and therefore Connecticut can collect sales tax basically on all those sales. And Amazon maintains that's not something that should be done. In New York, they're currently suing the state of New York, and that's been an ongoing lawsuit. We can talk to Dan about that a little bit as well. But there's been this ongoing legal battle in New York to try to get some of this defined. And we're really kind of getting into a whole new area of applying old tax policy to new business. So that's essentially the gist of what's going on. The Amazon's annual sales are $34 billion. That was the 2010 number. And that's a lot of untaxed revenue. So, you know, it's a pretty sizable situation there. So let me start off, Dan, with this. And Christine Stewart in the chat room also brings this up as well. Are Connecticut taxpayers a bunch of deadbeats?
No, not at all. Not at all. This is really an attempt by the legislature to enlist Amazon to help collect sales tax. If you, as it was mentioned earlier, if you walk into a brick and mortar store and purchase something that's subject to tax, the store collects that tax on behalf of the state and sends it over to the Department of Revenue Services. In a sense, the store acts as a tax collector and helps with the administration. Amazon, because it doesn't have a physical presence here, doesn't have that same requirement. And so really, it's an attempt at deputizing Amazon to become a tax collector for the sales tax.
And Connecticut residents, though, and this is why I asked whether or not they're deadbeats, because Connecticut residents are supposed to pay this tax voluntarily, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. The concept of a sales tax is that a retailer is supposed to collect the sales tax, but it's really the customer's tax burden. The customer is the taxpayer. And if a customer purchases something that's subject to tax without having the sales tax collected, it's actually the customer's obligation to self-assess a use tax. And in Connecticut, we self-assess a use tax when we file our income tax returns each year. In years past, you were supposed to have added up your purchases from Amazon, taken 6% of that, and written it down on a line on your income tax return to self-assess the use tax. So I guess the point you're driving at, which is absolutely correct, is that if Connecticut customers of Amazon were self-assessing use tax, the way they're intended to, this act would have really no revenue impact on the state.
So basically, if people were reporting this, and why doesn't the state go after people who are not paying their use tax?
It's a very difficult area to audit. The state does open use tax audits when they're aware of big purchases, things like boats or RVs. On the other hand, if somebody's bought an iPod online or maybe purchased some books or something, it's very difficult for the state to detect that, and it's not really a good use of auditors' time to go out and make those cases.
And what do you think the average tax burden would be for the average person who buys maybe a book or two on Amazon, or maybe bought a computer online or something like that? I mean, are we talking thousands of dollars per taxpayer a year, hundreds of dollars?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I am pretty religious about self-assessing my use tax every year, and it takes the better part of a day to go through all of the records and figure out exactly how much I should be paying. I don't think it's ever been more than $60. I'm a pretty avid internet shopper. I mean, most things that I can buy online, I will buy online. So we're talking nickels and dimes for each person. But the state actually put a $9.4 million fiscal note on this piece of legislation. So the state believed that this legislation would raise almost $10 million. So that gives you some idea of how much unreported use tax they thought was happening.
Right. And it's probably low, don't you think? I mean,
yeah, it's hard to speculate.
Yeah,
it's hard to speculate. And when you talk about fiscal notes, it's pretty much a black box kind of system. So we don't know what's behind that number. So we don't know if they actually did any kind of analysis. We don't know if they thought about whether or not Amazon would, take the action that it took in the other states so far. I mean, what happened today was fairly simple to predict, because it's what Amazon did everywhere else as well. So we don't know what's behind that number. But the result is they were able to add $10 million to essentially balance the budget based on this legislation.
There's a good question here. Can't they presume that individuals aren't reporting properly if they don't do it at all? Maybe the option to itemize or just assess an estimated value.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And some other states allow individuals to essentially use an assumed value for use tax, and it's usually based on their income. And it excludes things like big purchases, like boats or cars or things like that. But some states will basically say, geez, if your income range is in a certain level, we understand that it takes an awful lot of time to collect to tabulate your use tax liability. We'd rather collect something than nothing. So we'll let you report $50 or $100. And I know that that's been floated from time to time in Connecticut. It hasn't worked out yet, but certainly something like that would go a long way towards making use tax collections have some teeth.
And we talked earlier, you said there was some effort in Connecticut to, and perhaps there was a misinterpretation between what was asked of a department and what actually came out of it. But this was about a sliding scale based on your income to estimate use tax, kind of a, I guess it's a choice, right? You could choose to pay whatever the amount assessed to your income or your actual, right? Was that part of
what could be? Most states that have this kind of estimate allow you to either do an actual number or to just choose their estimate. They treat it like a safe harbor. If you make $50,000 and you report $60 of use tax, essentially you're home free. Again, not including large purchases. About 2 years ago, there was a movement to adopt something like this in Connecticut. And what ended up happening, instead of adopting a real safe harbor rule, the department just published tables that told you what 6% of certain amounts were. So essentially the tables would say, oh, if you spent $100, you owe 6 of use tax. I guess useful maybe for some people, but not quite what others had in mind when they were talking about an estimate like this.
So basically what's happening right now is we have a situation where the states want to collect sales and use tax that they're entitled to take. The taxpayers aren't paying that tax, not disclosing that tax voluntarily, and especially in Connecticut. Someone in the chat room just said that it's like 2-3% of all taxpayers are actually reporting this. So
I'll tell you, the joke among tax lawyers is that the only people that report this are the tax lawyers.
Exactly. I was just going to say.
Practicing what they preach, right, is the way it goes. But let me ask this. So the states have never really, up until now, have never really found a way to come after Amazon and others for, to try to do that attachment, to have that physical location issue, the nexus that is the terminology that's been used in prior court cases. Why do the states feel as though affiliate sales somehow meet the standard of a physical location nexus that other things such as a warehouse drop shipment location or a truck that travels frequently into the state and out? Why do they feel as though this is the way that they can get that done?
Yeah, well, The other examples you gave can give rise to nexus. It really just depends on what level of in-state presence there is. So you could draw a distinction between sending a delivery truck into the state once versus sending a delivery truck into the state once a week. If you send it into the state once, that's not going to cause nexus, at least under just about every court case that I've seen. If you send a truck in once a week or on some regular systematic basis, That will cause nexus. The affiliate issue, I think at some level, is a political issue. Obviously, the local brick and mortar stores feel like they're at a disadvantage because of sales tax, because you can buy online and it's less expensive. There's a whole nother conversation there as to whether the sales tax makes a difference or sort of the convenience and general discounts might make a difference. But there's certainly a political push. Brick and mortar stores like this, it evens the playing field. It makes Amazon have to play under the same rules. And then of course there's the issue of the anticipated revenue, and whether the state really believes it was $10 million or whether that was just, a good way of helping to balance the budget. I think it allows the state government to collect tax from people that aren't voting. Right, Amazon doesn't have a presence here, doesn't have a group of employees here, and so there isn't the normal kind of uprising against taxes. If you impose a tax on banks, all the banks go into the General Assembly and say, please don't do that. If you impose a tax on insurance companies, same thing happens. If you impose a tax on out-of-state retailers, there's not a whole lot that they can say.
All right. Can I let me ask you this? I think a lot of people, and this is part of the reason why we started looking at this, because the quick knee-jerk reaction is to just say, oh, it's another tax. This is terrible. But I really don't think most people actually understand what it is that's being taxed. For Lon, who is publishing his blog on, he reviews a lot of different products, it's essentially advertising. This is what Lon's activity here is, to advertise, on behalf of Amazon. And we don't pay taxes on advertising in Connecticut. if I'm not mistaken.
So some advertising services, perhaps, but I guess what you're saying is fundamentally this is being viewed as a tax on tangible personal property, but it could just as easily be viewed as a tax on advertising.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it really is a because they're not distributing. In a sense, you could almost say that a website is serving as a distributor, very similar to a brick and mortar distributorship in Connecticut.
Yeah.
You know, they're targeting a Connecticut audience. I mean, you could make that argument.
Yeah, and that's what the legislature would say. That's the legislature would say, why is Lon's website any different than having a store in Lon's house where people come in and shop?
Right.
And I would say there's a distinction also, and this is something that I think is worthy of discussion, is that Lon's website actually isn't even located in Connecticut physically. You know, Lon is. I type here, but not to talk about myself in the third person too much here, but I type maybe from Connecticut, but I could very well type from an airplane or on vacation or someplace else. You know, the physical location of the website, the server that hosts my website, is not in this state either. So I'm just curious, what has been kind of the metamorphosis of this notion that somehow an affiliate equals, I mean, is this going to hold up, is my question, because New York is going back and forth. Clearly that the court there, at least the state court, has said that the affiliates do meet the standard of a physical presence in the state. That's been now, I guess if there was a ruling in that regard, it's been appealed, and now it's just kind of waiting for the next step in the legal process. Perhaps it might go to the Supreme Court. Maybe they're waiting on congressional action. But what's your opinion as a tax attorney? Does this hold water?
Yeah, it's interesting. The analysis starts with whether it's sort of constitutional on its face. And if you read Connecticut's legislation, they include what could be referred to as a nexus carve out. They essentially say that any retailer can rebut the presumption, right? The presumption that the affiliate causes nexus by making a showing that the affiliate doesn't cause nexus. And they say, to the greatest extent allowed by the Constitution. And so what that does is if a court were to review Connecticut's statute, the court would first say, well, look, on its face, it's constitutional, because any retailer is allowed to go try to make a claim that is not constitutional. It's kind of funny and circular, and obviously this is why lawyers have a bad name. But so on its face, they have this carve out to sort of lead to the assumption that the law is constitutional. Which means that a retailer would have to come in and prove that under specific facts that it's unconstitutional. And what a court's gonna look at is are the affiliates required for this company's business? I mean, how much revenue is coming from affiliates versus revenue that's coming in more organically? Court's gonna look at whether there are other things that the state is offering to Amazon. Roadways, right? Amazon requires the state's roads to get its product from point A to point B, requires the state's airport, things like that. And so that's the argument that the state's going to make. The state's going to essentially make an argument that, look, we provide enough for Amazon, and we're not imposing on Amazon all that much, right? You know, it has big computers, and it can easily code some software that'll allow it to collect the tax and remit it over to the state. Amazon would argue on the other hand, all the opposite of that. I mean, it would argue that this collection it would impose upon its business. It would argue that the affiliates, although it's important, in an advertising sort of way, it's not really necessary to the business. It's really really hard to say whether a court would ultimately find this to be constitutional or not. And I think the best evidence of that is if you kind of look out at the case and you look out at some of the articles and law review notes written about the case, everybody's on a different side on this issue. I mean, the New York case upheld the constitutionality of the statute. There's a whole number of articles and things like that out there where you know, very learned scholars are saying, no, this is absolutely unconstitutional. It all comes back to a case from the late 60s and another case from the early 90s that really say you, the retailer, need to be physically present in the state if the state's going to impose a sales tax obligation. And, you know, most people wouldn't think that simply having an affiliate, you know, sit in Connecticut and type on their keyboard would be enough.
Right. Those cases were related to the mail order industry, right? This was before e-commerce, and there were Supreme Court rulings, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The first case was called National Bella Hess, and it was in 1967, and it was a mail order business where the business was shipping from Missouri into Illinois. And, you know, typical mail order business, it would send catalogs to prospective customers. The customers would submit an order. The retailer would send the order in through the mail. Illinois had something in its statute that essentially said that a retailer, the definition of a retailer includes a person that solicits orders by catalog. And so they went after National Bella Hess for sales tax collection obligations. And the Supreme Court, you know, went through a constitutional analysis, but at the end of the day, just really said, you know, what is Illinois really providing to National Bella Hess? You know, they're not providing much. They're not providing services to National Bella Hess. National Bella Hess isn't relying on the police power of the state. You know, they're simply just not resident there. They don't have a presence there, and so therefore, it would be unfair, or in that case, unconstitutional, to require National Bella Hess to collect the sales tax. And I think, you know, if you look at it just one state at a time, you know, you look at the state of Illinois in that case, you know, sure, it wouldn't be that hard for the company to start collecting Illinois tax. But what the court was mindful of is that, you know, there are 50 states. And so for a mail order business to have to collect sales tax in 50 different states, keep track of the changing laws. You know, sales tax rates change all the time. What's taxable and what's not taxable changes all the time. And that was just too big of a burden to put on a mail order retailer. Mm-hmm. The next case I referred to was in 1992, and it was called Quill. You know, very similar facts, except instead of selling clothing, Quill sold office supplies. And the court came out the same way. In 92, you know, the only interesting thing there is that the court really said that, you know, if it was looking at this with fresh eyes in 1992, it may have gone a different way. I mean, it basically left open the possibility that, you know, this would be constitutional because really things had changed in those 25 years. You know, there were computers. It was easier for a retailer to deal with multi-state tax compliance, but what the court said was, you know, there is this whole mail order business out there. There's a whole industry that's been built up with a certain set of rules, right? Including the rule that you only collect sales tax where you have a physical presence, and it's not the court's place to change that rule. If the rule is going to be changed, it ought to be changed by Congress.
Sure, and there's been investments made in property and things like that. That would be a pretty egregious change.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a lot of people.
And let's talk about Congress for a minute, because there have been some efforts to not have the federal government collect sales tax, but to require that online retailers collect sales tax for their customers in the states that they live in. So if you know, Doug moved to Massachusetts, he would be billed Massachusetts tax, irrespective of whether or not the company has a physical presence in the state. Have you done any research on that?
No, I haven't looked a lot at that proposal. I know there's a whole number of proposals out there. You know, one of the proposals that Connecticut never got involved in was the whole streamlined sales and use tax movement.
Right, and that's what this bill that at least one of the bills that was out there was to connect with that. 23 states, I think, were involved with it, but Connecticut hadn't been part of that consortium.
Yeah, I think, to the extent I understand why, I think the reason is really that, you know, even in the streamlined sales and use tax context, there was a lot of variation among the states. And there, while it may not be a consensus, a lot of people certainly believe that that streamlined sales and use tax would never work unless Congress actually took some action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole concept being that there would be a uniform set of rules that all the states would live by. And so while states may have different tax rates, they would generally have all the same things taxable. And so that way, if you were an online retailer, for example, you know, you might know that Connecticut's one rate and Mass is a different rate, but you don't have to worry about what's taxable and what's not taxable.
Right.
I mean, that's really the tough piece.
And do you see this case, having studied now the two cases that everyone refers to, clearly there's a broader constitutional issue beyond New York's borders, beyond implications there. As we talked earlier before the show, you mentioned that the fact that the New York case has not been successful for Amazon yet, that it's still ongoing, has led other states to take the action Connecticut took. Do you see this case getting to the Supreme Court?
It certainly looks like it has a good shot of it. I mean, I think 10 or so states now have this law on the books. Obviously it's something that's of concern to the nation. And so it's the sort of issue that would be ripe for Supreme Court to look at.
This is a government 1.0 versus a government 2.0 issue in my eyes. Back in the day, it was mail order. And, you know, that may have seemed like a big chunk of industry, but when you're starting to talk about one company with $34 billion worth of annual revenue being able to essentially create a tax haven for itself, a sales tax haven, it's just an enormous chunk of GDP that is not being taxed. And it just doesn't seem like the intent of any kind of law related to whether we tax internet commerce had these kind of numbers in mind.
Yeah. It may be. I mean, I guess part of that is the issue of is Amazon a real sympathetic plaintiff, or defendant, I guess, depending on how it comes up. But and you're right with those numbers, for Amazon to say it would really burden my business if I had to collect tax. Right, exactly. I don't know if that's the type of argument they could make.
They're doing this in other states. I mean, they're collecting the tax in New York. In lieu of a resolution. So it can be done. It can be done reasonably, by passing the cost on to the consumer.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, that's the other issue, though. I mean, in referring to it as a tax haven for Amazon, is not entirely fair.
Okay.
Because Amazon's not supposed to bear this tax anyway. Right. This tax is supposed to be borne by the consumer. Amazon's obligation would be to collect it. And I mentioned to Lon earlier, in fact, there are a couple states that actually pay the retailers to collect their tax. And I believe New York is one of them. And so what the states will do is they'll give the retailer like 1% as, to offset its costs in collecting the tax. This really shouldn't be a burden on Amazon in a technical way. What I think the burden is to Amazon is there's a assumption that this is 6%, or in Connecticut 6%, or off of their the sales price. In other words, if I buy from a Connecticut retailer and I walk into the store, even if Amazon's selling at the exact same price, I would save 6% by going to Amazon. Now the presumption there, maybe that's back to the first question, is are Connecticut residents tax cheats? It's only 6% savings if you don't self-assess the use tax.
Everybody's got to pay their taxes. Yeah. There's a lot of duty being, people doing their civic duty there, making sure they pay their use tax.
Yeah.
It's a bad situation, obviously, for the government. There's a couple comments here I wanted to share. Matt mentions that Apple is having no problem doing this. And Apple has got a 1% tax that they're paying to Connecticut because they have people here in Connecticut. They have offices here.
Yeah.
So when you buy a song or anything on iTunes, there's a 1% tax that goes to the state. And they're not having a real problem with that.
Well, Apple has the stores, obviously.
Right.
So that creates their physical presence.
Right.
So they don't have any kind of constitutional argument. There were some stores that were set up to separate online from bricks and mortar. Barnes & Noble is an example of one where they, you know, it was the same enterprise, but they tried to have separate entities for those businesses. And that's been met with, you know, really mixed success or mixed failure, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
I don't know the intimate details of Apple, but presumably they aren't set up that way, or if they are, they're not making that same kind of argument. So they have physical presence because of the Apple stores, and so that would require they collect Connecticut tax. Again, they're not. I mean, just to keep in mind, they're not paying the tax; they're passing
right.
it through
passing
through
it
to us, the consumers.
Right.
And I guess the point that it's a 1% tax just is further evidence of the problem that these out-of-state retailers have.
Those are on digital products, right?
That's right. Yeah, Connecticut has this oddball 1% on digital products that was actually, you know, again, it was one of these taxes that was in and supposed to phase out and never phase out entirely. and so, you know, again, these are the things that retailers have to monitor to make sure they're in compliance.
Yeah. You know, it's a common practice. There's a lot of, you know, commenting on these stories on CT News Junkie and CT Tech Junkie, and there's also testimony, and there was lobbying done. Yeah, ESPN had their lobbyists. My wife, has Christine, has mentioned that ESPN lobbied against this because they thought it could, you know, lobbyists lobbied for ESPN, so because they thought their advertisers were going to be there's going to be issues. You know, essentially, if I go, but there's an urgency here that is kind of missing from the conversation. Is if I go to buy a camera lens at B&H Photo in New York in the camera district, I go to New York, I look at the lens, it's, let's say it's a $10,000 lens, which is not too uncommon down there. I go in, I look at it, I test it, I'm ready to pull the trigger, I walk outside, I pull out my phone, and I make the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just too easy. And you know, if the state's going to lose, you know, that kind of change, that's the urgency. I mean, look, everybody's bankrupt.
And I think there's a real challenge here, as we talked about before, that, you know, to audit a small transaction like that is really difficult and probably would cost more than they may bring in.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, all the action or most of the action in sales and use tax audits is going and auditing the retailer, right? Because part of the law says if the retailer doesn't collect what it's supposed to, it's liable for it.
Right.
So even though, you know, remember I said earlier it's really the taxpayer's obligation, that may be true, but the retailer is secondarily liable if they don't collect it properly. That is the tax collection mechanism, and it has been. I guess looking at it from, you know, real kind of practical view, you know, can Amazon.com or, you know, the other big one, of course, is Overstock.com, can they figure out how to collect Connecticut sales tax? Sure, absolutely they can.
and do you think they will? Because they're collecting it in New York.
Yeah, we speculated earlier that they may be collecting it in New York because that's where they're bringing their case.
Mm-hmm. And they can stick it to them afterward?
Well, to have standing in the court, they need to show that they've been harmed.
Oh, I see.
Again, that's just speculation. I don't know really what's going on in their minds. They may have some kind of presence in New York. They may view New York's markup that Amazon's allowed to take as being fair and allowing them to offset the cost. I really don't know what's going on in their mind. I think, Lon, I think you identified a few states that they collect sales tax in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, most likely because they have some kind of presence in those states and are required to collect the tax. On the other hand, they backed out of most of the other states that have passed the so-called Amazon
right.
law, as has Overstock.
And you know what I found intriguing too, in looking through some of their materials, there's a page on Amazon where they describe, you know, what they collect and from where. If you buy something from Target on Amazon, as an example, you will pay sales tax on that transaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they clearly have the ability to do that. You know, it seems to me as though this is Amazon trying to put a line in the sand about, you know, whether or not the constitutionality of these prior two Supreme Court cases is going to hold up. And this is what, that's what it seems like to me, is a fight to determine really the way this market's going to go. And to some degree, there's not a lot of parity necessarily in that Amazon, who doesn't really, you know, who relies on being virtual, that a majority of their infrastructure is in a few places, but by and large they try to keep, you know, they outsource everything that they do. They outsource their shipping, right? UPS and perhaps some common carrier options for that. They outsource some of their electronics. Actually, get drop shipped from distributors, not even from an Amazon facility, you know, in New Jersey and some other places nearby. So they do a lot to not have the infrastructure and take that savings and pass it along with low prices. But other companies like Walmart have tremendous physical infrastructure. They have to pay the sales tax because they have that infrastructure in there. And clearly, they're both online retailers with sizable amounts of revenue. So there seems to be the real question here is really how do we find parity and fairness? Because it's to some degree not fair to Walmart even, and many people would never, you know, want to feel sorry for Walmart ever. But in this case, they are at a disadvantage because they do run brick and mortar stores, and Amazon chose not to. In the case of Apple, I bought my MacBook Pro from Apple directly, mainly because Amazon wasn't going to get the one that I wanted right away. But I don't pay tax on Amazon if I buy it there. I pay the use tax later. But in the case of Apple, they're charging sales tax for a very expensive piece of equipment. So, you know, where do you think this is going to go, in your opinion, as a tax attorney?
Yeah, well, let me just pause for a minute and say when you mentioned feeling sorry for Walmart, I threw up in my mouth. you know, the point that you raise, it also, you know, relates back to an earlier comment that you had where you said that even though you may be typing on a computer in Connecticut or elsewhere, you know, the server that hosts your site is in yet another state. The fact is that business is changing, the business models are changing, you know, things are becoming, you know, much more disintegrated in terms of business models, just as you pointed out with Amazon. And clearly, you know, governments are going to have to be smart in order to collect the same type of tax revenues. Whether that's getting smart with something like this Amazon law that's sort of going after new business, or whether it's getting smart at finding other sources of revenues that they hadn't thought about in the past. And, you know, it's hard to say, is this law going to ultimately be found to be constitutional? You know, so far it seems that way, right? I mean, that's what the New York courts have said. But clearly, other things are going to need to evolve as well. You know, hopefully at a fast enough pace that the government's sort of thinking ahead and not a few years behind.
Great.
Well, quick thought here, Christine. I had asked Christine a minute ago. There was some talk in the chat room here about, you know, this is Amazon throwing its weight around. And in a sense, Amazon is trying to put pressure on Connecticut affiliates, and there's a variety of types of those, to pressure the state government not to do this tax. Whereas there's also people up at the Capitol. Christine tells me that Malloy, the governor, didn't want to do this, but he was forced to by Representative Wildes from Guilford for some reason. I don't know the motivation there, but basically they're pushing the federal government into action here. You know, Connecticut is doing this to tell the federal government, you know, you need to act. And maybe this will do it. You never know.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting thought.
It's hard to say.
It really is. But I mean, clearly this is a problem. Or an issue around the nation, so we ought to get some answer soon. You know, many of these cases end up being tried in lots of states, you know, litigated in lots of states, and it's not until you get some baseline of appellate court review that the Supreme Court considers taking it. You know, in some cases, you can get quicker action or action from Congress, which I think seems to be everybody's preference here. You know, the cynic in me believes that, you know, there's a business person over at Amazon who says, look, you know, we're giving a 6% discount to everybody. We don't want to lose that.
Right.
You know, and of course that's cynical, but it may also be what's part of what's driving this. And you're right, the more altruistic person might say, well, geez, what Amazon really wants is an answer that's uniform through around the country. You know, it should have no problem collecting the tax as long as there's a set of rules that it can easily live by.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, Dan, we want to thank you for being on the show this evening. We know you have a little one watching a movie that might be ending soon, so we don't want to keep you on for too much longer. But we definitely want listeners to go to your blog and something that you're looking to develop a lot more over the next couple months. So where can we find your blog?
Yeah, well, thanks, Lon. I started a blog at taxingpoetic.com, like waxing poetic, but taxing poetic. And obviously... Welcome comments on these or any other ideas.
Taxingpoetic.com. Excellent. We'll definitely check that out. And we thank you for coming on. I'm sure this will be something that will be discussed a lot more as time goes on. So we will perhaps bring you back on for this and for other tax issues also, because really a large problem facing many businesses is A, how to compete against some of these online retailers, but taxes also apply to other things on the internet too, and there's a lot of money moving around the internet, and the states are getting hungry, so we'll see what happens there. So but again, thanks very much for coming on the show, and Doug and I are just going to wrap things up real quick. Doug, we've got an exciting visit coming up. We're going back down to the Space Center for the last space shuttle launch in July. But before that, we did get approved to go on a tour and interview some space shuttle engineers inside of Space Shuttle Discovery. And we're going to hopefully do some video on that and get up there. So our next podcast, you know, it might be 2 or 3 months from now, hopefully sooner, we'll be discussing that. I think it's going to be a really bittersweet moment to see Atlantis go up, but we're also going to get some really unique access to a real American treasure, I think. So
yeah, they won't fire up the engines or anything for us, but you know,
no, it's but still. Yeah, we're going to get a long set of instructions next week as to what we can touch and what we can't touch. And I'm assuming the goal will be not to touch anything while we're inside of it, even though it is partially decommissioned. So we have that coming up. We're also going to try to get some reaction from local retailers too on this tax issue. So I think this is a topic that really hasn't really had a lot of depth to it, and I hope we can. Get some more depth in there now that this thing has passed, and people just need to understand exactly what it's all about. So we'll have a pretty sizable story going up on CT Tech Junkie tonight, which will shed some more light on this. Dan was kind enough to give us some quotes and some time for that article as well. So we thank him for that. Anything else, Doug?
You know, I had put the graphic up. We didn't really talk about the impact on specific people. You know, bloggers are, mm-hmm. they're one group of people, but there is at least one business that runs specifically off of Amazon. So there's some real impact here.
There is. Yeah. And we're going to try to get him on. Was it freeshipping.com, I think was the site.
Right.
Christine had interviewed him. You know, there's people making, you know, a lot of money. You know, for me last year it was about $400 and something, which that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a pretty decent amount of revenue.
That's the revenue portion for you. And
right.
That's on a total of roughly $9,400 in purchases.
That's right. So if you clicked on my link and you live in Connecticut, don't be a deadbeat and pay your use tax. I mean, it's that simple. But
that's $650 worth of you know, sales tax at 7% that was not paid.
Yep. That's exactly.
You paid tax on your 421 because that was income.
That's right, and actually that's an important thing that. You know, we need to cover too, is that these affiliates have been paying state and federal income tax on that as well.
Yeah. It's complicated.
So it's very complicated. But and Rick in the chat room mentioned Roxanne Cody. We're hoping to talk to her too, because she owns a bookstore that's actually doing very well in Madison, and she had to adjust for for how Amazon changed the industry, and she adjusted very well, opening up a cafe and bringing in more community around the bookstores. Maybe we'll try to get her on an upcoming episode as well. So, but that'll do it for tonight for the CT Tech Junkie podcast. Thank everyone in the chat room for joining us. We had almost 30 people on tonight, and this recording will be out on the site as well very shortly. Thank our guest, Dan Gottlieb for providing his tremendous tax knowledge to us. And
Rogan and Nassau.
Rogan and Nassau. Sorry, I forgot the I lost my show notes disappeared on my on my thing there. So when you get into trouble with taxes, you know the man to call. And that'll do it for this episode, and we'll call it a night.